Abraham Lincoln spent his first 21 years working the dirt-poor farmlands of the young nation's frontier. His hardscrabble upbringing leads us to ask, how did the farm shape the character?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 627th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends who are tuned in down there in Ensenada as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Are we having interesting times in the studio this morning?
Yes, super fun.
Also, producer Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
And Parmley Taft.
Hello.
Folks, Abraham Lincoln was not the most handsome of presidents, as we all know. In his Gettysburg portrait, for example, we see that Lincoln's eyes are focused in two different directions. And whereas the right side of his face appears solemn with sunken cheek, extended lower lip, and ominous glare, the left side appears to be smiling and somewhat happy. Lincoln's looks might be a direct consequence of his serving in the hard work and the low pay and the miserable conditions of spending a youth on the farm. Consider this incident from his youth. When a young lad of 8 or 9, Abe was given the chore of hauling his family's corn to a neighbor's grist mill and then milling that corn into meal. After Abe hitched his horse up to the mill, he gave a big swat on the butt and to get it moving. But instead of moving, the horse reared back and kicked young Abe square in the face, knocking him senseless. Witnesses thought the young boy dead and went off to report the fact. To be certain, farming the frontier provided many lessons from the school of hard knocks to the future president, and those knocks may well have had an impact on how he looked to us today. But today we pause to ask, what impact did farming's school of hard knocks have on the development of Lincoln's character? And what impact did Lincoln's character have on the shaping of the United States? And finally, Abraham Lincoln was shot dead. The Republican Party has been voted into oblivion. What about the virtues of hard work learned on the farm? The frugality, the courage, the hard work. Are they gone too, or we'll never see them again? What do you think? Here to help us look into the past to maybe see a bit of the future, we have, let's see, I'll push that button. Are you there, Kurt? There we are. Kurt, do I have you now?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. On vacation, it says here. Where are you vacationing?
Well, I'm actually in north central Indiana.
Is it cold there?
It's about 60 degrees, so it's not so cold.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. So, you are from the land of Lincoln, Chicago, Illinois. You're a professor of history at North Park University, Chicago, and you're
That's
the
right.
author of Lincoln's Land, which is an interesting book with some interesting illustrations in it that I enjoy reading thoroughly. It's part of a project on Lincoln's Land that's being put together, isn't it?
It indeed is.
Tell us a little bit about how your book, Lincoln's Land, is fitting into the real Lincoln's Land.
Okay, I'd like to say first, if you wouldn't mind, just a funny anecdote when you were talking about Lincoln's physical appearance.
Right.
Somebody said one time in public that they thought Lincoln was two-faced. And he said, if I had two faces, do you think I'd show this one? I thought that was a good line.
Well, he seems to have a lot of good lines. You know, Google Lincoln's quotes, you get a million of them.
Yeah, he turned the phrase pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let me tell you a little bit about what we mean here by Lincoln's Land, and then a little bit about, and then I'll try to give shorter answers so that you can follow the things that you think are pertinent.
Sure.
This particular land that we're talking about is some land actually in central eastern Illinois, not far from Kentucky, in Coles County. And it's land that actually Abraham Lincoln owned right adjacent to his parents' farm called the Goose Nest Prairie in Lerna, Illinois.
So it really is Lincoln's land.
Indeed, yes. It's his parents' farm, and it's actually a 40-acre portion of their farm that he owned and that now is owned by an organization called the Friends of the Abraham Lincoln Historical Farm. They're trying to use it for public purposes.
Mm-hmm. And so your book is actually part of a fundraising effort to hold this land in a public trust and to keep it for future generations, correct?
Indeed. The land, the whole design of Mr. Dan Arnold, who's a businessman from Rockford, Illinois, and the organization he formed is to preserve this land in public trust for future generations and to use it to raise funds and other resources to help philanthropic causes, in language that he used, to support the causes that Abraham Lincoln would have supported, things like literacy and education and civic-mindedness, leadership, things like that. And as also to sort of preach the importance of Lincoln's virtues to future generations.
Well, and that's exactly what fascinates me about your project. I've often thought that the worst thing to happen to our country in the industrialization of our agriculture was that we took young people off the land and put them on the street corners where they hang around with not much to do.
Yes, indeed.
And to me, it's one of the great tragedies. And so I thought we'd look at Lincoln's upbringing on the farm and talk a little bit about those virtues that upbringing gave to Lincoln and where that's taking us today. So let's go back to Lincoln. Of course, in grade school, we learned that Lincoln was born in a one-room log cabin. I don't know what they teach in grade school anymore, but he really was born in a one-room log cabin.
Indeed, Abraham Lincoln did not live in a home with a floor until he was maybe almost a teenager.
Wow. So, when one hears the word dirt poor, is that kind of what you're talking about, a home with no floor?
Well, it kind of depends exactly what you mean by dirt poor. It is a little bit hard to understand about Abraham Lincoln. He did indeed, until actually after the death of his birth mother when he was 9 years old and the arrival of his beloved stepmother, who kind of brought the house into order and finally forced her husband, Thomas, to put a floor in their cabin. Until that point, he did grow up on the frontier, kind of on the edge of settlement and development. As a result of that, he did live in what we would consider to be very meager and impoverished standards. However, his family was a family of middling frontier means. So his father was a capable worker with his hands. They engaged in farm work primarily for their own consumption or small barter, not for large-scale farming. Mm-hmm. And his father was considered to be a respectable citizen, served on juries, was active in the local community. So Abraham Lincoln was poor, but that's because he lived on an agricultural frontier, not because he was particularly impoverished.
And to understand just how frontierish like it was, his grandfather was shot by Indians right in front of his father, right?
Oh, absolutely. When his father, Thomas Lincoln, was 8 years old on the Kentucky frontier, this was a part of the advancing white settlement into the Trans-Appalachian West. And his grandfather was shot by an Indian right in front of his three little boys.
Did he survive?
No, his grandfather did not survive that.
So there it was. His grandfather was shot right in front of his father. And so there it is. That is the frontier, I guess, right?
Indeed. They're out in the middle of it. You got it.
And, let's talk a little bit about frontier jobs, too. You talk about the notion that you might not be poor because you're impoverished, but you're poor because there isn't anything out there on the frontier.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My father, who was a veteran of the Great Depression, always seemed to pride himself on what he could get by without in the world. And talked about how the people of the Great Depression prided themselves in being able to make do without a lot of things.
Right.
And that's really the situation with respect to the frontier, right?
I think so. I think one way that cultural historians put it is the Great Depression reminded Americans of 19th century what we call producer values. sometime around the end of the 19th century, with the advent in urban America of things like department stores and the ability to buy things on credit and a whole host of other items that began to produce a sense of consumerism, valuing people, sensing value in themselves and each other by what we're able to consume, by that which we purchased. But prior to that, in a largely agricultural America, virtues were defined primarily by what people could produce and the qualities it took to produce things like frugality and hard work and prudence and temperance and a whole series of virtues that come with smaller scale rural agricultural America.
That's what we're looking for today in the history of Lincoln with Ken Peterson and you right back. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
So what happened to the values of Lincoln? The president, the 16th president, was assassinated. The party he was the titular head of, the Republican Party, has been voted into oblivion. And what about the values of that you learn being raised on a farm, the hard work, the courage, the frugality? What happened to those things? It seems like they all got lost. So we're looking at those values and seeing if we can find them again in the history of Lincoln with Ken Peterson, who is the author of Lincoln's Land. Take us back to that one-room log cabin, because you have a picture of it in your book, Lincoln's Land, Ken. And, you know, just looking at that, you just think, oh, my God, it really was bad, wasn't it?
Indeed. In fact, you can also get a feel for it if you do visit Illinois, Lincoln's Land. In Springfield, the Lincoln Presidential Library and Historical Museum also has a reproduction of that inside their museum space.
Mm-hmm.
Has a realistic reproduction of the size of that space, and it was, you know, again, we're talking maybe 12 to 15 feet by 12 to 15 feet, one room cabin for a family at one point of five. So indeed, it is. It was a very, very small place out on the frontier to try to live and raise a family.
Well, their first frontier was in Kentucky, and then from Kentucky didn't quite work out for them. Why not?
Wait, Abraham Lincoln actually lived on two different farms in Kentucky with his family. He was born on one in 1809, and that his father had purchased in 1808, having lived in one previous farm in Kentucky, and then in 1811, 2 years after his birth, they moved again to a farm on Knob Creek in Hodgenville, Kentucky, just about 10 miles down the road from the original one where he lived, because of the land wasn't very good for growing produce.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why his parents in 1816 decided to up and leave Kentucky is for two reasons. One reason is because of lack of clear land title. Kentucky had not been organized under the Northwest Ordinance of Congress, and so it was always unclear as to who had title to which parcel of land.
So
and
it was it was a chaos. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, Thomas Lincoln found himself in court all the time trying to prove himself the rightful owner of land that he paid for.
So there you are out in the frontiers of the country. You buy some land, and it's not your land. Everybody has the right to fight you for it.
Exactly.
Do you think that had an impact on Lincoln and his desire to, I don't know, become an attorney?
I think so. I mean, Lincoln Probably. I mean, it's hard biographically, but some biographers do sort of draw that connection of his early childhood and the legal battles that his family suffered in order to stay on the land. Yeah.
Which they eventually lost and had to move on.
Well, and I think it wasn't necessarily owned that they were losing those, though he did lose title to one of his earlier farms, but it was just that he could not maintain sure title and thus always felt like his livelihood was going to be ripped from him.
So they moved on. What was the other reason, by the way?
Oh, and the other reason was quite simply the institution of slavery.
Oh.
Kentucky was a slave state. And for people like his father, he opposed slavery for a number of reasons. They opposed slavery for religious reasons. They were separate Baptists who believed with a branch of Protestant Christianity that opposed slavery as an institution. But just as strongly, he opposed it because slavery was for the wealthy, entrenched white elites. And that got in the way of opportunity for hard-scrabble frontiersmen to be able to, through their own blood, sweat, and tears, advance their own condition in the face of the wealth of those who were already established.
So the institution of slavery then was kind of like a way of subsidizing rich landowners.
Oh, indeed. In fact, this is obviously the case for Abraham Lincoln, too. As he grew into adulthood, the founding ideology of the Republican Party in the 1850s is what we call free soil ideology that directly opposes slavery, not only or even primarily at that point in American politics for what it does to the slave, namely the rights of the enslaved, but because of what it does to
free enterprise.
Poorer whites and free enterprise and opportunity, that you can't figure out a way to make your way in a culture where those with entrenched wealth have systems that also not only control the agricultural policy, but also control local policy.
So you're stuck in a frontier where the rules are kind of rigged. You buy your land, you don't really know whether you have that land, and then you're competing against people who have slaves, and you can't compete against them.
That's exactly right.
So you move on?
That's certainly how Thomas Lincoln saw it. So in 1860, the family moved on to the recently founded state of Indiana, and there had been a complete state survey of the land. But he squatted on some land for a period of about a year, and then he bought some land and was able to have sure title and was able to, with the absence and the forbidding of slavery in that particular state, was able to rely upon his own hard work to advance his own family's condition.
And he was a hard worker, wasn't he, Thomas Lincoln, in spite of what they say about him?
Well, it's actually the sort of historical jury is out on that one. In my own judgment, I think, through examining much of these historical sources, I do think his father was a hard-working person and was able to sort of cobble together a life on the frontier.
Well, this is in Indiana. The young Abe becomes a young boy and a young man, and he becomes the guy with the axe in his hand.
Indeed.
Why the axe?
Well, that's one thing about his family. Although his family were
The cover of Lincoln's Land, your book, The History of Abraham Lincoln, it has a picture of young Abe with an axe in his hand.
Well, in his own political history, he's remembered as the rail splitter. And certainly he did spend a lot of his youth and young adulthood with an axe in his hand out on the frontier.
And for those of us who have not split any rails, nor do we know what a rail is,
this is simply the making of fences.
Ah, okay.
They would have 6 to 8 foot sections of fence, and then they would have to split these by hand using a complicated system of mauls and axes and it was a grueling process, but if they were going to put up a fence, they had to make the rails themselves, and that's what Abraham Lincoln certainly did a lot as a young man.
Wow. Okay. Indiana, what was Indiana like? That's incidentally where the story occurred with respect to going to the grist mill and getting kicked in the face by a horse. And there were, I guess, lots of hard knocks about growing up in agriculture like that, right?
Oh, indeed. I mean, this was... the life expectancy, male or female, was under 40 years of age at this point in American history. So, to actually make it into adulthood, most families would have maybe half of their children actually make it through into adulthood.
And there seemed to be a lot of that Lincoln's family, a lot of death and dying.
Oh, indeed, it's Lincoln not only his family from his parents, both of his siblings. His younger brother, Thomas, died when he was only 2 years of age as an infant. And his sister, Sarah Lincoln, died in childbirth when she was, I think, 21 years of age. So neither of them made it through fully into adulthood. He was the only one that made it.
And his mother died of the milking disease?
Yeah, they call it milk sickness, actually. This was in, again, 1818. Abraham Lincoln was 9 or 10 years old. His mother, it actually happened to two family members as well. It actually happened to a lot of people on various periods. What happened is that they would allow their cattle to range and graze freely, but not primarily out on grass frontier prairie, but instead among trees and woods and forest. And there, at times, cattle would come upon a poisonous root, and that would actually make their milk poisonous. And if you drank of it, you could actually die, and many did.
And many did, and that was from eating free-range food out on the prairie or out in the woods.
Yeah, right. In the forest, yeah, finding a poisonous root. And I forget the name of the root. It certainly does have a particular name, but off the top of my head, I forget what it is.
Okay, good. Folks were in search of Lincoln's character and what impact that character had on the United States and the young country, and what happened to his party and to the values of that party and to the values of Lincoln. Where we'll be able to get them now that we're no longer being raised on farms. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. If you'd like to ask Kurt Peterson some Lincoln questions, pick up your phone and join us. Well, when I was a wee lad of six or so, my grandfather Carl put me up on the seat of an International Harvester tractor and pointed that thing down to the end of the row, which is a million miles away from my estimation at being 6 years old, and said, "Kid, I'll meet you at the other end. Just keep it going straight." So away the tractor went, and away I went on the seat of this giant tractor. There was no way I could even touch the pedals. It's just the tractor was in gear and it had enough speed and it was plowing its way to the other end of the field. So I held on, and I'm sure if my grandfather were to do something like that today, he would be thrown in jail for child endangerment or exploitation or something like that. But somehow I made it to the other end of the row, and my grandfather was there to meet me. And though I was so scared, I literally peed my pants. I survived that one. Today, you know, I'm not afraid of vehicles. I can drive any kind of vehicle, big or small. I can ride motorcycles. I can pilot boats. I can fly airplanes up to and including my Mooney Mark 20C, which is the only machine I ever loved. But I'm not afraid of machines in the least bit, and I'm a good driver. And I think, you know, overcoming that fear when I was 6 years old in the seat of that tractor had a lot to do with that. But, of course, there are no farms like that, or very few anymore, and so children aren't raised in those circumstances where they have to actually overcome things. And so where do you get the virtues of farm life if there are no more family farms to be raised on, or very few anymore, 2% of us now instead of 98% of us then? And so we're looking back at those virtues in the form of Abraham Lincoln and his land and his lands with Kurt Peterson, who is the author of Lincoln's Land, which is a booklet put out in support of an effort to preserve Lincoln's farmland in Illinois, the land of Lincoln. And so that's what we're talking about today. We're reaching back to those virtues as embodied by Abraham Lincoln. And so when he... why did they move from Indiana to Illinois?
Again, there's a part of the reason for that was difficulty because of the land he was actually tilling. Mm-hmm. And I also think for them it was indeed simply sadness. Thomas Lincoln and his family, in many ways, not only did his wife die, but also her sister and her husband died, and it became a place of great pain. In fact, Abraham Lincoln, when he went back and visited later on in his life, also considered Indiana to be a period of great pain and suffering. So because of difficulty in the land and also for emotional reasons, the family decided, actually at the invitation of a family member, to move up to Macon County, Illinois in 1830.
I guess that's always one of the great things about a new frontier, right, is that it allows you to reinvent yourself, move on.
Indeed.
And become
Indeed,
somebody else and take part in new opportunities. And so off to Illinois, what was that like for them?
Well, actually, it was a very difficult, again, out on the frontier, life is anything but easy. You have to migrate as soon as the winter thaw breaks and try to make it across the spring-flooded prairie in order to get there fast enough to fence your land and build a cabin and prepare for the following winter. So preparing a frontier existence was anything but easy. It was quite difficult. And so in the spring of 1830, they made their way up to Macon County, Illinois, outside of a little town today of what is known as Decatur. And they had an absolutely terrible summer. It was a summer filled with malaria and disease in the family. And then came winter, and this is remembered in the mid-century and 19th century Illinois as the winter of deep snow. They had a very, very harsh winter from 1830 into 1831. And as a result of that, the family sensed that they were doomed, and they turned right back around to go back to Indiana.
Wow.
And then on their way back, as they were traveling back, again, not just Abraham Lincoln's parents, but a whole series of extended family members, they wound up running into some people that they had met on their earlier journey to Macon County in what is now Coles County, Illinois, and they were talked into staying, and they agreed to do that at first for short term, but then they stayed for the next 30 years. His father died in 1851, and his stepmother would die at the very end of the 1860s, and they remained in Coles County the rest of their lives.
So this is where the Lincoln family finally ended up. In Coles County, Illinois.
Yeah, but not Abraham. He didn't go with them that time.
Ah.
Yeah, he was now 22 years of age. And legally, he no longer was beholden to his father financially. So when they left for Coles County, he actually made what was his second, at that point, flatboat trip to New Orleans. He built and with two other gentlemen took an entire flatboat worth of goods and produce, pigs and farm produce, for Denton Offutt, who was a store owner in New Salem, Illinois, and took that down to New Orleans. And then when he came back after that in late 1831, he did not go live with his family in Coles County, but instead settled in New Salem along the banks of the Sangamon River.
So, and he's about this time in his life, he's moving away from being a farmer, right? Probably a little bit like myself. You know, I hoed so many weeds when I was a kid, I jokingly referred to myself as a teenage herbicide. And I suppose that Lincoln was a lot like that, too, you know. You're out there splitting fence logs and making fences and chopping down trees and working and working and working and working and yeah. Being poor and being poor and being poor. So maybe it's time to look elsewhere. So that's what Lincoln did, correct?
Yeah, we have a mixed message here with Abraham Lincoln. On one hand, he made it crystal clear that he wanted away from the farm. He wanted out of the drudgery of frontier life, of working so very hard and finding it difficult to advance oneself. Even as a child, he wanted to read and advance his intellect because he was gifted with such an intellect. His father would get frustrated that all he wanted to do was read, and instead thinking that he should be working. So Abraham Lincoln has some pretty choice things to say about getting off the farm. but yet at the same time, this is made most clearly by both books and articles by a scholar by the name of Wayne C. Temple, who's archivist at the State of Illinois Archives, you know, that he used farm imagery his entire political career.
Right.
And he praised the local farmer for the virtues that they brought to American culture. And he did that all the way until the very end of his life. So on one hand, he wanted to get off and advance his condition. On the other hand, he saw it as the laboratory where American character could be developed.
You know, interestingly enough and ironically enough, this is so reminiscent of another world figure, Mao Zedong, who as a young person, would be hauling manure from one of his father's fields to another, and would have books in his back pocket. And so he would walk out of sight and put the pails down and lay under a tree and read his books. It sounds a little bit like Abraham Lincoln there.
Oh, indeed.
Okay, folks, we're looking for the virtues of Lincoln in the Lincoln's Land, a fine little tome by Kurt Peterson, who is a professor of history in Chicago at the North Park University in Chicago, Illinois. And, of course, that is the land of Lincoln, and there's much being said about Lincoln these days with a president from Chicago. And so we're looking at those virtues of Lincoln, and we're going to ask what happened to them and where can we find them today. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson with Kurt Peterson and you right back. Do stay tuned. So what happened to Abraham Lincoln and the virtues of the man? Gosh, the Abraham Lincoln was shot dead, assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. The Republican Party was voted into oblivion by you and I. And what about the virtues of hard work, frugality, and courage? Earned simply by working the family farm. There aren't many family farms anymore, so we've turned our youth loose on the streets of the city. We put them in the schools and we hand them certificates of self-esteem, but it doesn't seem to work. Or at least I haven't seen it too much around here. What happened to those virtues? Can we find them again? Those are the questions we're working with today with the author of Lincoln's Land, Kurt Peterson, a professor of history at the North Park University in Chicago, Illinois, which is, of course, the land of Lincoln. I guess that's should be the lands of Lincoln, though. He's kind of made his moves across the new frontier there, didn't he? Kurt.
Indeed. I guess I would imagine that Kentucky, Indiana, and Illinois all have claims on Lincoln, but it's Illinois where he grew to manhood and spent most of his young adult life and political life.
Well, you know, with respect to his young adult life and his political life, it seems like people really liked the guy, and there must have been something about him that they really liked because they kept voting him to represent them on, you know, from one step to the next, and what was it about Lincoln that people liked?
Well, Lincoln was first elected to public office as a member of the Illinois General Assembly, as a member of the Whig Party in 1834, and he did so representing his small community of New Salem, Illinois. New Salem, Illinois was indeed a frontier town. And it was actually a relatively important town, not too far from Springfield, because it became sort of a central gathering place for local communities. There were a couple of stores there. There was an inn. Eventually, there were all kinds of public resources. Again, a very small town. So people from the surrounding area would come there. And while there, Lincoln ran a couple of different grocery stores while he was there. He ran the mail, the post office. He was a postmaster. He also did a number of odd jobs and simply did what he could to make ends meet in times where it was difficulty. He did land surveying. And in the midst of all his public life there in New Salem, he became known as a very honest person filled with integrity.
Honest Abe.
At one point, you know, traveling several miles by foot to give just a handful of change to someone from his store who had left his change and not taken it away. He also was a person with a keen wit. He loved to tell stories, and people would gather around him. He was committed to his community. He was a person of strong moral character and was seen for his honesty in business dealings, and I think that's what led him first to be elected by a very small community to represent them, and then eventually led to further political office.
When he first went to the state assembly, didn't they look at him as the rube? You know,
yes, indeed. He was, Abraham Lincoln, you have to remember, had the grand total of perhaps less than 1 year, maybe 1 year, give or take, of formal education in his entire life.
Less than 1 year of education?
Yes, he did it all himself. I mean, as a young adult, I mean, he was reading Cicero and Euclid and the great Greek philosophers on his own by candlelight when he was living in New Salem. And so Abraham Lincoln, though very intelligent, was certainly not all that sophisticated, even into the 1830s and into the 1840s when he met and married Mary Todd, again, the daughter of a quite wealthy family from Kentucky. He was considered to be sort of a frontier rube, not all that sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. Was there an attraction in that rubishness to the sophisticates of the city? I mean,
at that point, you have to remember again in the early 1830s, Illinois was just being formally settled,
mm-hmm.
and this was even before the state capital moved to Springfield. Until 1837, the capital of the state of Illinois was in Vandalia. And again, it was a very small town, and the Illinois General Assembly, he wouldn't be there all that much. He would only be there several weeks out of the year while they were in session. So, he was not necessarily part of the elite, but there wasn't much of a political elite in the early 1830s in Illinois.
So, what impact did those virtues of being a country frontiersman, I guess, boy, he really was a frontiersman, have in his, when he went to Washington, D.C.? I mean, this guy found himself in the most contentious of times ever. Civil War, ending of slavery. Oh, my goodness. How did those virtues of being raised on the farm play out in his time in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think in one very practical way, I think Abraham Lincoln had a steadfast mission his entire political career, and that was to preserve the Union and free labor so that individuals could advance themselves through their own hard work.
And that was kind of the founding principle of the Republican Party?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And that was consistent through his entire political life, I think, and then you combine that steadfast vision with an understanding of the Constitution and what makes America great, and combine it with a sense of hard work and honesty. Lincoln, in his young adulthood, in his 30s and early 40s, rode the state circuit in Illinois as an attorney under sort of incredible conditions, forming relationships all over the state and defending people in court. He was a very hard-working, committed person who befriended many.
Okay, folks, In Search of the Virtues of Lincoln with Kurt Peterson and you right back. This is The Food Chain. I'm Michael Olson. Well, it seems like there were two things that really pissed Abraham Lincoln off. One of them was slavery, and the other one was slackers. Fair enough thing to say, Kurt Peterson?
I haven't said it quite that way, but it sounds good to me.
And perhaps for the same reason, too, because slavery and slackers really interfered with the ability of the individual to survive and prosper and find their own way in the world, correct?
I think that's right. And in the case of Abraham Lincoln, it actually became not just theoretical but very personal. He considered his stepbrother, the son from a previous marriage of his stepmother, whom he loved very deeply, Sarah Bush Johnston Lincoln, he considered his stepbrother, John D. Johnston, to be just that, a slacker. And he was very concerned, particularly after his father's death. Abraham was concerned about the well-being of his mother and saw John D. Johnston, because of his refusal to commit to the virtues of hard work on the frontier, as a threat to his mother's ongoing, not only physical, but economic well-being. And so he actually preached these things not only in public through speeches, but even in his own personal familial relationships.
It seems like, though he wanted to escape agriculture all of his life and become a big city attorney and president of the United States and everything else, that it was really the thought of returning to his small farm in Illinois that provided the security or provided the comfort he needed to get through some terribly hard times. I mean, the war against the states. Oh, my goodness. And he is responsible for holding the Union together. And yet it would seem to be that that thing he wanted to escape all his life was the thing that, that held him together and gave him a place to go in his mind to escape and look for the future.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a handful of particularly poignant moments in Abraham Lincoln's life. One of them is actually recited for us by a 19th century a Protestant minister by the name of Russell Conwell, who was actually an officer in the Union Army, who eventually had a meeting with Abraham Lincoln in his office during the Civil War. And there he said Abraham Lincoln talked to him simply like a farmer, talked about his land that he owned in Illinois, talked about his plans to go back to that land to live out his life in pastoral simplicity once the war was over. And so for Abraham Lincoln, the land kind of became an important remembrance and a solace for him in a time of stress and worry.
Gonna pack up my bags and move back to the farm and grow onions.
Indeed, at least that's certainly what we're working with. That's what Conwell recounts for us.
Well,
yeah.
Kurt Peterson, you know, in putting together the land of Lincoln, you must have looked at the history. I only have a little bit of time left, but what do you think about the virtues of Lincoln? Will we be able to inculcate them into our children and raising them in the city as we do?
Yeah, we may not have as many farms as we used to, but we do have literate children and we have educational institutions. And we also have a current America that has witnessed very clearly the failing virtues of overspending and get what you want at any moment. And it seems to me that we can use the resources from our past to teach virtues to our children.
Kurt Peterson, thank you so much for joining us, folks. This has been The Food Chain. We've been talking about the virtues of Abraham Lincoln. Where can we find them and bring them back so that they can hold our country together again? And been a fun time, Kurt. Thank you for joining us, and thank you all out there for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on The Food Chain.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.